right, welcome back to a special bonus episode of the Infamous Podcast. And as you know, for this month or this year, it's this year, right?
This year.
Yeah, we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. And I said it right that time. And today, Johnny and I are going to review Star Trek First Contact, the eighth film in the series and the very first of Next Generation only.
Yeah.
So
full Next Generation.
Yeah, cast. Full Next Gen.
Yep.
So what did you...
And by the way, if you didn't know, this is Brian and I'm Johnny.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Brian. Yeah. If this is your first time listening...
Welcome.
We like to talk about comic books. We like to talk about TV and movies. But most importantly, we like to talk about how comic books make all that stuff better. Essentially.
I guess, sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much the crux of this show. Anyway, so I watched First Contact again last night.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix if you guys haven't seen it. Totally worth a watch. It's my
favorite.
Right now,
I think almost all of the Star Trek movies are on Netflix.
So the ones that aren't are either on Hulu or Amazon.
Well, there you go.
So they're all streaming right now. This is my favorite of the Next Generation ones.
But not your favorite of the whole series?
No.
Okay.
Because I think I made that claim before.
Yeah.
And then I went back and thought about it.
Okay.
I was like, wait a second. This is not.
Yeah, there is. This is probably my second favorite Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I'm going
to. No, it's third favorite. Sorry.
I'm going to put it at my number two.
Okay. This is my third. There's two classic tracks that are my one and two.
So, and I think our one is probably different.
Probably.
And your one is probably my three.
No, my three is this.
Yeah, I said
your three is my one.
So, anywho. All right, so this one of, I guess, from the voyage home through the, whatever it was, the Nemesis, right?
Nemesis.
This is the one that felt the most Star Trek of most of the movies.
Yeah.
Voyage home
is very much Star Trek.
But it's
time travel Star Trek.
It is. Yeah.
This is time travel Star Trek as well.
But I like the time. There's a theme there.
The things I think about with Star Trek The Next Generation, because those two are the most similar to each other, is the morality of people and, how people are. But showing it with an alien race or something like that.
Right.
Whereas these Star Treks is reflecting on humanity itself.
Sure. Yeah, no, the whole story of this one I think is really cool. Because we get to see the fabled first warp flight with Zefram Cochrane.
Right, yeah. The only other time we had seen Zefram Cochrane was in an original series episode.
Right.
So, yeah, that was...
And it was, what's his name, James...
James Cromwell.
James Cromwell, who...
That'll do pig.
That'll do pig. Who was in the original, or was in the series.
Yeah, then, he had shown up as a few different aliens.
And he was in the... he was in Enterprise as Zefram Cochrane.
A few times.
In the Mirror Darkly version.
He shows up in the premiere episode.
And he's in the pilot.
Yeah.
As himself. But, he's great. I love him.
Yeah.
Did you remember L.A. Confidential?
He was my
favorite part of that. Mainly because he's, like, what I remember most about that movie.
Yeah.
I thought Patrick Stewart, this was my favorite just outing for him as Picard. Because he was smart and a warrior and caring and full of rage from, the Borg and
at a certain point he's compared to...
Ahab,
and I think that's why he got cast as Ahab eventually.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Because of this. Because he played Ahab in a Moby Dick miniseries that I think USA Network produced a few years after this.
All right.
And it's like, obviously there's a reason why.
And there's a couple reasons I think this one is probably one of the better of the second half. Is it was written by Brandon Braga and Ronald D. Moore.
Right.
Ronald D. Moore, if his name sounds familiar and you're wondering why, he was the showrunner, creator, whatever, for the Sci-Fi Channel version of Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
The reboot or reimagining.
Well, if you're a Star Trek fan, Ronald D. Moore is like one of the guys.
Oh, yeah. That's who you want.
The Klingon stuff and a lot of the Borg stuff.
But, and then it's directed by Jonathan Frakes. So, you know, it was... It was on paper, when you look at it, it's got a really good just pedigree to start with.
Yeah.
So, and then they delivered, and it was a great cast. When you sat down, I told you, I forgot Alfre Woodard was in this yep. movie, and she was great. You know, I'm looking forward to her later this summer in, or this fall in the Luke Cage series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so, okay. So the plot of this one,
sorry. Oh, I was going to mention that the guy who played Zefram Cochrane on the original track was Glenn Corbett.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I'm trying to remember, let me see if I can find the episode name. Metamorphosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and check that one out.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you watch Enterprise, they talk about Zefram Cochrane disappearing.
Right.
And it gets answered on Star Trek what happened to Zefram Cochrane. So
cool. So this one starts out, it's the Enterprise E.
Yep.
Because Picard and his group have gone through, you know, a couple of these at this point. Is this the second one? The destroyed D.
D, it was destroyed in Generations.
Right.
So Enterprise E's meant they're like never was mentioned until this.
Right. I think like the aesthetic of E of the bridge was very cold, right? So like on the series and in Generations.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of like wood and things like that. It's very warm and it's got that really cool like ramp behind right. where the captain sits.
The horseshoe.
That's thank you. It.
Yeah.
And this one was very much like, you know, captain's chair in the middle of all the madness, but it was all dark metal and screen and things like that. So it was cool. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it did not feel as inviting as other versions of this. Right.
I mean, Starfleet finally realized, gee, Picard, you're a magnet for a lot of crazy shit. Maybe we should give you a military ship.
You need a more powerful vessel.
Yeah.
Be
it that Starfleet is an exploratory organization, but when it's somebody that attracts a lot of attention, where, you know, he was a Borg, he, you know, has pissed off enough people that, you know, people are gunning for him all the time, give him a ship that will be a little better in battle than something that's going to separate.
Like the Defiant and things like that, well, you know,
That was fun last night. We started watching it, and when Defiant shows up, she was like, I didn't realize that it's as small as it is, because the Enterprise flies right past it, and she goes, that ship's that small? And I said, it's that small, but it's a badass ship.
And Riker makes the comment, like, oh, it's a tough little ship.
Yeah.
And Worf's like, bah. But, no, it's...
at this point, Picard Worf is on like, Deep Space Nine.
Right. And Picard is like Deadpool in all this, right? He doesn't take the shits. He just disturbs them.
Yeah.
You know, he's there to shake things up. But yeah, this movie kicks off with action.
Yeah.
The Borg pop up out of nowhere. The fleet's attacking. The Enterprise gets sent to the neutral zone because, you know, the Admiralty is still concerned about the whole Locutus of Borg thing going on. And,
Could he be manipulated? Is he? And it goes that I think that goes back to Patrick Stewart's part of Amnesty International.
Yeah.
And they did the episode where he was a prisoner of the Cardassians.
Right.
But he also was a prisoner of the Borg.
Yeah.
And I think it references back to the fact that people do get conditioned when they become prisoners.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was the whole idea between Braga and Moore was show that they are afraid of him because of that fact.
Yeah, they don't know what he's going to do or, you know, any of that. And then, you know, of course, things go badly for the Federation.
Right.
Because any ship that's not the Enterprise is not as good.
I mean, obviously, everybody's competent in the Starfleet. Otherwise, they wouldn't be flying their...
Well, until they become, like, admirals. Like, you know, then I think, they become crooked.
Well, they're in the offices. Yeah. they're on Earth or another starbase or something.
Right.
But they're riding a desk, kind of like Kirk did. And it's one of those things where, unless you're out there, you don't really know what's going on.
Right. And so then the Borg attack.
Yeah.
And the fleet is getting torn apart.
Yep.
And the Enterprise swoops in to save the day. And Picard... he's having flashes, he's hearing things.
Which they've always referenced that he still had that,
the connection.
You know, he still has pieces in him. Kind of like Seven of Nine on Voyager.
Right.
Parts of her were still in there.
Right.
I mean, you know, because when the Borg assimilate you, they remove pieces and put other pieces into you.
Right.
So, I mean, when he got brought back in the Best of Both Worlds, he still had stuff in him.
Right.
So it's one of those things where when they've encountered the Borg then, it's like, you know, he couldn't hear them because they weren't the Borg that he had encountered.
Right.
And that with the whole lore taking over part of the Borg mm-hmm. sect and mm-hmm. that, so.
But, yeah, no, it was cool. And then they show up and he's like, hey, aim right here. And, like, none of his crew question it, except for Data, who's like, well, that's a, you know, secondary system. He's like, trust me. And, like, you know, everybody fires. Ship explodes, but not before this little sphere jumps out of the Borg ship.
All part of the plan.
All part of the plan. And it's a time ship.
Right.
And it's going back in time. And it's great because they pursue. And then as they're pursuing, you hear, I think it's Troy say, is that Earth? Or what's happened to Earth?
No, it's Data. Data's like scanning. Right. And he's like, sir, look at Earth.
And you know, it's...
they all were like, what the hell is going
There's
on?
There's 9 billion people, and they're all Borg.
Yeah, and like, Dr. Ooh. Crusher, being that she is a medical doctor, and I think they wrote everybody really well, because she's like, well, how could that have happened?
Right.
And why are we still able to see it? And they explain it. And it's like a one-off explanation, but I told her last night, I said, that's for people who don't understand time travel. Right.
You're caught in that rift. Of course you're outside of time and space at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, punch it. Let's go. And, and so they end up back in the 21st century, 2063.
Yep.
So, you know, so we are, you know, just a half century away from warp flight, right?
What are we waiting for? World War III?
It's happened. Yeah. 10 years after World War III. Well, right. The factions.
In the Star Trek universe right now, the eugenics war would be happening, but we wouldn't know about it.
Right.
Because it was a silent war type thing.
Right, right.
So it possibly is happening.
Maybe. Who knows? But then, you know, it was cool to see that, and you know, I like the 21st century clothing, blah blah blah. As they're like going down, and everything.
If
that
you're
they
gonna
need.
Order your clothes, order them ahead of time.
Right. It was just fun, and I think of, you know, even I'm gonna put the J.J. Abrams ones in this. I think this one paid the most attention to detail.
Okay.
For you know, not just like story, but those little things. You know, there was a scene with, like, further down in the movie with Picard and Alfre Woodard in the holodeck.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, wait, this is the wrong chapter. And he's like, hey, new chapter. And then, you know, they get there and he's firing that Tommy gun. And,
right.
And she's like, I thought this was a hologram. And he turns, he goes, I turned that stuff off.
Yeah.
You know, I turn the safety protocols
off. Yeah, because as he's punching buttons, he's doing stuff that you don't know what he's doing. And then he explains it
and
later.
And that's what made it cool because, I mean, first off, You know there's safety protocols if you've watched the show.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when he starts shooting them, you're like, oh, that's what he was doing. But then he explains it. And it was like, it was better than him being like, sometimes that just happens.
Yeah.
You know? So,
I think that, you know, Braga and Moore actually were very attentive to knowing that this was a movie that everybody was going to see.
Uh-huh.
Because this is the type of Star Trek movie that regular people that aren't in the Star Trek would see. But they also wrote it for fans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, when he shoots the Tommy gun off and everybody's like, oh, well, wait, did he turn off the safety protocols? It's like he says it and you're like, okay, well, that answers that.
Yes, he did. I thought the effects in this were amazing.
The Borg in the dark room with all their little red lights. When the security guards open up the door and the Borg are all like, you know, all of a sudden you just see all the little red laser lights come on. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, you're all Borg now.
So, I don't know. You know, just some interesting things about this, though, is you look back at the time, right? It was a November. It was a Thanksgiving weekend movie. It grossed $30 million, almost $31 million in its first week. And that was the top U.S. box office.
Right.
Like, you look at now what that Thanksgiving weekend is, and, you know, that's normally like Hunger Games, Harry Potter, Thor, things like that. Doctor Strange is in that.
But I think that this Star Trek movie was perfect for that spot.
Right. And I mean, it grossed, you know, it did well. I think it's what
they
its
didn't
domestic
really
gross
have
was
anything
almost
to go up
million.
Against.
Right.
At that point. I mean, what? That was between Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
Because I think Harry Potter, that was when they decided to do the one in June or whatever.
No, this was 1996.
Oh, sorry.
So, yeah, Harry Potter wasn't really a thing yet.
Well, Nemesis was the one that got bombed by Lord of the Rings. So,
but anyway, it was successful for the Star Trek movies, box office wise. It was, you know, relatively adorned. You know, there wasn't really a lot of like, the reception wasn't bad. But yeah,
I think really dug the makeup.
Yeah, the Borg. They all looked so cool.
Yeah.
I thought, like, we talked a little bit about some of the casting, right? Neil McDonough as Lieutenant Hawk was great, and I was really bummed when, you know, spoiler alert, but it's a 20-year-old movie, they killed him, you know?
Well, they Borged him, and then they killed him.
Yeah. Worf was interesting because he was super tough guy Worf, but then he was also, like, vulnerable. I'm afraid of being outside in space, Worf.
Right.
Which is always fun.
Well, yeah, the space sickness thing had been brought up, I think, on Deep Space Nine at one point. So, I mean, there's cameos from Robert Picardo as an emergency medical hologram.
Which was hilarious.
Ethan Phillips, who played Neelix on Star Trek Voyager, as the maitre d' at the club.
Yep.
And there's a lot of fun little, like, nods to stuff in here.
Adam Scott was the helmsman of the Defiant.
Yeah, yeah.
So, from Parks and Rec.
Brandon Braga shows up in the holodeck scene. Dwight Schultz showed up as Lieutenant Barclay on Earth,
yep.
And it was he literally plays that character, like, to the point that you're like, yeah, every time you see him, you're okay.
It was
awkward Barclay.
I always like to think of how Scott Lang was with Captain America in Civil War.
Yeah,
like, I think I like to pretend that's an homage to that scene.
Probably is, yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know. I'll say this because the story again. Was just so, it was interesting and it was fun. And it was, you know, there were stakes.
Yeah.
There were, you know, people were dying. The ship had been invaded and mostly turned. And then,
yeah, Picard's like, you know, if somebody's turned, kill them.
Yeah.
Because you're putting them out of their misery.
Yeah, he just didn't, like, he wasn't concerned with the well being at that point of his crew members. He was concerned with the mercy. And then we haven't talked about her yet, but Alice Craig as the Queen.
Yeah.
Was great, and she was so scary and, like, kind of sexy.
She's scary and everything. Yeah.
She did you ever watch Children of Dune on Sci-Fi?
No. So was she in that?
She's Jessica, Lady Jessica.
Okay.
Who, she was recast Lady Jessica
it.
To be her because I think the other lady had some other thing going on. And, like, she put the level of terrifying that you felt like Lady Jessica should have.
Yeah.
And was warranted when people were afraid of her.
You know? I just remember her from Ghost Story and from Sleepwalkers, and she's a frightening woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Quite seems like she might be quite an intimidating woman just on her own, and she
has those really intense eyes.
Yeah.
You know? She's just, like, staring you down.
Yeah.
But, yeah. What were you going
to... Oh, I was just looking at, like, trivia and that. Like, they were talking... You talked about the bridge... And that it says certain USS Enterprise bridge set pieces from previous Star Trek movies were built into parts of the Enterprise E bridge. These pieces include the turbo lift foyers, which are the only surviving part of the set from the first Star Trek movie.
Oh, wow.
Part of the bridge from Star Trek V is in there also.
Oh.
So, you know, they reuse pieces all the time. I mean, obviously on the JJ movies, they haven't reused much, but... In these Star Trek movies, you know, to keep the budget down, they reused a lot of pieces from other stuff.
What was it? Deadpool used some scenes from The Last Stand.
Yeah.
As, you know, the filler shots and stuff like that. So
I really enjoyed when Picard lost his mind in the observation deck and destroyed the display of all the Enterprises.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, hey, the Enterprises got destroyed in a movie again.
There we go. So I did like that, like, while it was messed up, they did not destroy the Enterprise in the movie.
Right.
You know.
Right. I liked, you know, there's always been the talk that the Vulcan that comes out at the end is Spock's grandfather.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always been that talk that he's, I think, Ston was his grandfather's name.
Okay.
And that's supposed to have been, like, I guess, integrated into the...
Canon
of it all, that was Sarek's father.
That scene at the end with Cochrane and the Vulcans and the dancing and, like, you know, whoever that Vulcan was looking at him like he was the preacher from Footloose looking at Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is this dancing? This is not right. Yeah,
this is not logical.
Yeah. But please stop whatever it is that you're doing.
It was just like we've talked about in Nemesis and in Insurrection. Even though Insurrection did have bits of family moments with the crew, this one was where everybody got their shining moment and everybody, was meshing together really well. Well, I mean, when they're hunting Cochran down and, you know, Geordi had told him about the statue that's standing in the spot where he was standing. And Riker shoots him, stuns him.
Yeah.
And he goes, you had to tell him about the statue.
Well, I liked when he tells Geordi, I got to take a leak. And Geordi's like, I don't see a leak anywhere. Yeah. He's like, dude, I got to pee.
He's like, oh.
And then drunk Deanna Troi was great.
Yeah, drunk Deanna Troi is.
She's like, I'm going to tell him. It's like, you can't tell him. She's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
He's a jerk.
This is a barbaric age. Yeah.
And I did like, here, this is the good stuff. And she drinks it and she's like,
oh, yeah.
And like, he does a little arm shake thing. Like, you got to watch the scene. It's really funny.
It's just that when she says, nope, it took three shots of tequila before he even would talk to me. And it's like, oh, that's bad.
That makes sense, you know, when as we meet him. But no.
It also the acknowledgement that the legends that we have in history may not be what if we met them, they may not be what they're talked about.
Because
Cochran is a legend to these people. He is the father of warp flight for Earth. He's the father of the human race going into space. Right. And that, and I mean, you know,
I mean, he's the founding father of their new way of enlightenment.
He's their Einstein, their Newton.
But he's not there yet. Like, that's the thing. Like, he has to go through these things to get there.
Well, and it's fun because they're the ones who helped him become that Zefram Cochran.
So now there's, like, the tale of two Zefrans, you know?
Well, and it's the funny thing that, you know, and Riker says it. He goes, I'll put that in my log, you know, because I actually have to do action reports.
Right, right.
And it's, like, it's funny thinking about them getting back and having the actually tell who he really was, and people are going to look at him a little different, but they're still going to be like, he's still the legend he was.
Yeah.
But then they're going to know about Lily, who was his, you know, stalwart assistant,
right?
Who, you know, protected the ship when he was getting drunk.
Yep.
And it's like, it's a whole different thing. And what was cool, like, and because the novels carried on the 24th century story,
right?
Eventually, one of the helmsmen that shows up on the Enterprise E is one of Lily's descendants.
Oh, cool.
So it was like a cool little nod to the movie that, you know, one of these helmsmen was related to her and his name was her last name. Like, he was a nephew or a nephew, you know, down the ages type thing.
Great grand nephew.
Yeah. I mean, like the novels, and that's the thing, you know, if you want to check out more, the novels reference back to this movie a good amount, because there's the whole Borg story at Destiny where they explain where the Borg came from, and it acknowledges stuff that happened in this movie. That's kind of cool. Enterprise is a good thing if you never watched Enterprise to see what happens after this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
yeah, because there's those couple episodes where the Borg wake up and they're
they acknowledge what happened to the Borg when they destroyed the time ship.
Yep.
And so, that, because not all of them got onto the Enterprise, obviously. Right. And that, there's cool stuff. There's a website called TrekCore that is a lot of reference to Star Trek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have a section that's like promotional photos and that. If you want to check out some cool makeup work, there are a Cardassian Borg, a Klingon Borg, and one of the other alien races, Borged. Like, they were showing, and you can see the Klingon in the background when Picard walks into the engine room.
Yeah.
He's literally standing up behind Picard on the wall, and it's like, seeing the makeup close-up is really, like,
awesome.
I want
to see an Andorian.
Michael Westmore, I mean.
I want to see an Andorian Borg with the little antennae and, like, you know.
Like, one of them Borg.
Like, one of them is Borg and the other's not.
Yeah.
And, like, it kind of always leans towards the way of the the real antenna, because, you know, without it, they're, they have no balance.
Yeah, Westmore, like, I mean, you know, obviously he's the celebrated artist that he is, but, like, this is some of his knocked out of the ballpark artwork.
The sets were great.
Yeah.
The space sets were great. The space walk stuff was believable.
Yeah, it was very believable.
The makeup, like we've talked about, was great. And one thing we haven't talked about that I think was probably his best outing was Data with Brent Spiner, because he was actually complicated.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he's typically a one note character.
Right.
But to have him, you know, really seemingly consider taking the Borg up on their offer.
For what, 0.012 seconds or
something? Yeah, it was like 0.38 seconds or something like that. For which, for an android, which is a lifetime.
Yeah, that's what he says, yeah.
So, but no, and he gets like some human skin and hair on his face, and he gets bit on his arm.
When you imagine where that came from, it's like, okay, he's wearing one of his crewmen.
What crew member did they take spare pieces off of?
Exactly. To,
but I did like when he had like the hair, like the little the little part, and she blows on it, and he basically has like a droidgasm.
Yeah, you know? Was it good for you?
He's smoking like a cigarette afterwards.
Well, and that's another cool one where it's like the history of Star Trek: The Next Generation gets referenced in this
because
she asked how long ago it was when he had sexual relations, and it was Tasha Yar back in the first season, and it literally, if you look at the time, it is that time. Yeah. And it's like,
it was years, 14 weeks, 7 days, 3 hours and 14 seconds.
But it's just like, that's cool. That's cool that they like, you know, keep track to reference that stuff. But yeah, it was a fun movie altogether. Like I said, probably my third favorite. It is my third favorite of them.
I agree. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about this
right.
one. Like, I really like watching it. Like, if I still had cable, if we weren't cord cutters, and this was on, no matter where
this is one of those.
No matter where it is, I'm going to just sit down and watch the rest
of
it. So, even if it's the last 15 minutes, I'm like, I definitely want to
From the acting, directing, writing, the makeup, the music, Jerry Goldsmith, as always.
Which we used Jerry Goldsmith's main title theme at the beginning of this this episode to,
Yeah, Jerry Goldsmith, like I said with Westmore, Jerry Goldsmith as an artist could do a lot of stuff with Star Trek. I mean, he uses the Klingon theme when Worf shows up with the Defiant, and it is a different tone, but it's still a Klingon theme. And it's like, truly an artist when you can do that with your own music. So, yeah, this was one of the great ones.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about, like, the whole family thing, right?
And, yeah.
Like, you know, kind of like Frakes believe the main themes of this were, loyalty, friendship, honesty, and mutual respect.
Right.
And you see that with this group of people.
Yeah.
And not just with the crew, but the respect that they give Cochran that he eventually gives them. The respect that they give Lily that she eventually, buys in completely, it almost would have been cool if she had gone back with them.
I think the reason that didn't happen was because of the thing in Star Trek 4 with Jillian going back with them.
It would make more sense for Lily to go back than Jillian, but
would, but it wouldn't, because I think deep down they didn't put it in there, and I don't know if it ever was thought of in that, but I think Lily loved Cochran.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how, but I think that she loved him to the point where she would never leave him.
Okay.
Behind, and that brother, sister, whatever, it was that thing where she loved him enough that she'd be there for him for anything.
Sure.
And that, so
I can see that.
I'd like to know in the recorded history who his co-pilots were, because it was Geordi LaForge and William T. Riker, and it's like, and that's the fun thing is because we don't see everything in the Star Trek universe, because it is a small universe for viewers, but for the writers it's a big universe.
Right.
When Cochran and Riker are sitting there in the Phoenix and he tells them there's all this on the moon, because they're looking at the moon,
right?
And it's like, that's the kind of stuff like that an expanded universe is what we want to see, is that type of stuff.
Right.
So it's like, for those guys who are working on the new Star Trek series, that's the kind of stuff we want to see.
Yeah, like, keep that in mind, please.
Yeah,
and it was it was, cool, like Armstrong Lake.
Yeah, and Tycho City. Yeah. And it's like, that's cool. That's cool.
But, well, cool. I mean,
and it's all because of you, Dr. Cochran.
Yeah.
Stop saying that.
Yeah. Where I'm from, 50 million people live on the moon.
Yeah.
It's not just this ball of wasted real estate.
Right.
But anyway. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I don't feel like we have much more to say about this.
Because
this has been a gushing love fest of, First Contact.
Yep, definitely one of the good ones, like I said.
So, all right. Well, on that note, if you have not listened to episode 46 yet, go back and listen to episode 46, because there's a special surprise somewhere near the end.
Yes.
And we are giving away a free digital download to Deadpool,
yep.
the movie, not a comic book or anything like that. So go listen and check it out and follow the instructions, and you may be the winner.
Yeah. And what, next month? Well, this month, so, next yeah. month will be...
Disney Sci-Fi Month.
Disney Sci-Fi Month. We've got Star Trek Generations coming up by the end of this month mm-hmm. that we'll talk about. And then Star Trek VI next month.
Yeah.
The Undiscovered Country.
I watched that one not too long ago.
And the original Klingon.
No, in Dutch.
Oh, well, there you go. Wow. Wow. That's really an obscure language. I was trying to think of an obscure language.
So, in the original Latin.
I watched it in Indonesian.
Anyway, hey, we're the Infamous Pod Podcast. Podcast, blah, blah.
So you pronounce Star Trek right, but you're now pronounce, I can't pronounce podcast right, totally yeah. wrong.
All right, so we're the Let me try this again. We're the Infamous Podcast.
Yes,
you can find us online at infamouspodcast.com, and because we like to keep things easy for you, our Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram are all Infamous Podcast. All kind of works. So you know, definitely check it out. Let us know what you guys think. Let us know how you feel about First Contact. Do you love it as much as we do? Do you hate it? And are we idiots? Let us know.
Don't worry, I'll send a contingent of Borg if you tell me I'm wrong.
A fully armed battalion of Borg.
Exactly.
We'll be coming for you. But yeah.
I am the Borg.
You know, we have new, if you're new, like we said earlier, yeah. We have new shows every Friday. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, you know, 5-star reviews on any of those platforms are yeah. super helpful to move us up in the ratings and, you know, get us where
any
we want to go.
Feedback is appreciated.
Yep. And then if you want, go to our website and sign up for our email list, and you can get more cool information from the show. About what's happening in the world of comics and nerdery.
Yeah, and I think September is going to actually be Star Trek month. I think we're going to talk about the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, and there might be a contest that month too.
Yeah.
A Star Trek prize package contest.
I'm going to do just a quick spoiler about when we talk about Voyager.
Yeah.
You only need to watch the first and last episodes. Done.
Oh, no, there's some good episodes in there.
Anyway.
The Year of Hell is probably one of the best two-parters they produced of Star Trek.
All right, I'll have to go back and watch that thing because I don't remember it. Okay, guys. Well, thank you for listening. Have a Star Trekful month.
Oh, and you can find me.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Twitter and Instagram, Johnny Podorf.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at Brian Tudor. And if you have trouble spelling our names, just... go to the website, and there's links to everything, to all that fun stuff.
Yeah, under the About Us.
All right. Well, you guys have a great day, night, evening, afternoon, weekend, morning. Whenever you listen to this, you know.
Have a great life.
All right. Later.